Buckle up. It is go time. We have so much to talk about today. Good morning. I tossed around Pete. By the way, first, let's just welcome our new producer, not new to the station, but new to our show, Josh Wheeler. Josh, great to have you with us this morning.
Good to be here.
Great to have Josh. He'll be, as you know, Charlie got a big boy job. So Charlie, although he did text us this week and say, I can't believe I picked this week to leave after all the stuff is going on. He had so much to talk about, Pete. I didn't know where to start. There's so much to talk about. Mm-hmm. So I went with the latest thing that happened, and that's the Gophers' loss yesterday to Michigan. There's a lot to unpack with this. I want you to start your initial thoughts on the game itself, and then I'll launch into how I feel about the way this thing ended yesterday.
Well, as far as the game itself, we all know what we saw in the first half. It really wasn't anything great for the Gophers, and we put ourselves into a pretty deep hole. But the great part was we dug ourselves out of that. We were giving up so much on the run, and Mullings was doing a fantastic job for them. We had absolutely no running game at all, but the passing game was starting to work a little bit, and I think that was one of the things that obviously – as we got closer towards the end of the game, we get into the second half and the third and fourth quarter. The fourth quarter particularly, we really just started to just click, it seemed like. And that was pretty exciting because it gave us an opportunity. We could see that we actually can go toe-to-toe and maybe even get an opportunity to beat these guys. And I know that you want to talk about the onside kick, but I will tell you this: there's been a lot of really interesting calls in the last little over 48 hours on the Friday night game, Miami and Virginia Tech. There was a catch of a Hail Mary in the end zone that to my eyes showed me it was a catch. Now they were kind of wrestling with it, but the offensive player came down, was in there, had the ball. It got stripped as he's falling off of. Onto the ground, and they waited. They reversed the call, and they decided to say it was not a catch. So Miami was able to win the football game because of that Hail Mary. And let's not forget about this, what we have, but how about last year with the Iowa game?
Yes.
I watched that.
Return?
I watched it over and over again, yeah. Dave, and watched DeJean grab the ball. And before he did not put his arm above his head. He pointed straight in front of himself, got the ball, and it didn't seem like anybody had stopped to me when I was watching it. It was a great return. And so we were on the fortunate side of that one. So these things do go both sides, and I think that's something that's important to Pat to talk
that's
about.
That's the first thing I thought yesterday was, well, last year we got that one against Iowa, so this is a year later the makeup call. but it really – and I know we talked about this last year. I think this always bothers me so much when – if you're not – if it is not clear – and is not absolutely sure of that call, you cannot make a game-changing call like that. Mm-hmm. And the TV replay, and I want to make sure that this is very clear. When you look at the above camera, the one that's, you know, kind of that shows you the length of the field, mm-hmm. the camera's off center. So what we're seeing is a little bit ahead. If you bring that back to center, you probably get a better look at it. And I would hope that the officials have that. My problem is it does not look even close. Mm-mm. He is not offsides. No part of him is over the line, and the ball's already away.
Yeah.
And it's one play, and I respect PJ Fleck for saying I'm not getting anyone in trouble. It's not going to do anything. He's 100% right. Good for him for keeping a cool head. It's not going to do anything but get him in the school fined. So I'll say it for him. That was a garbage call. It was a garbage call. If you're going to change the game, and I've said in every single sport, if you're going to change the game with one call, and that's exactly what happened, you better be 100% sure that you're right. And I didn't see that. I watched it over and over and over, back and forth. I just don't see it. And so it bothers me that call is made. Now, the good thing about yesterday, you're right, the first half was not great. I was happy and appreciative that Max Brosmer, I think yesterday showed me he was the real deal to some degree, mm-hmm. in the sense that he was poised in the second half. I mean, he stuck in the pocket. He made some phenomenal throws. That throw that I think it was Daniel Jackson that caught that late touchdown. Mm-hmm. That was an incredible catch. It was really an amazing throw. He put it right where he could get it. And so I was really impressed with how well he kind of came back in that second half. But it just leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth. And maybe they wouldn't have done anything with it. Maybe they wouldn't have won the game. But it just bothers me because, you know, you saw it last night with the Georgia-Alabama game. And I didn't watch the end. But allowing the game to play out to the final seconds is what we watch for. And changing the game like that on a call that really didn't seem like it was a no-brainer to me robs everybody of what could have been a phenomenal finish, whether the Gophers won or not. That's why it bugs me.
And how about where the ball ended up because of how it all played out? I mean, we were well into Michigan territory, gave us a great opportunity. And I totally agree with you, Dave. It's a phantom call. It's a phantom offsides. I don't know how you wouldn't go back and at least look at that. Very easily, the play was done. And you could very easily say, okay, let's take a nice long look and see if this was the right and pick up the flag. And we've seen those flags get picked up in the past. And so it made all the sense in the world. It seemed like everybody that they went to basically came up with the same thing. I don't see it. So under those circumstances, it's kind of like, hey, why isn't this getting looked at? Why didn't this get the 3 to 4 minutes it took at the Miami-Virginia Tech game on Friday night? Yeah. Take the time and get the call right. Now, I'm not even saying that they did get it right or wrong necessarily in the Miami game, but I thought this was exactly what you said, Dave. It was very, very clear. Nothing on his body was over. The ball was out. It was all there. Hey, by the way, I have to throw out some kudos to some of our players, though. That Coy Parrish. Yeah. We talked about him and all these Minnesota kids that had maybe gone and come back. And he stands out, I think, more than any recruit out of the state of Minnesota for sure, but maybe even the team. But what he's been able to do for the Gophers with the punt returns, the kick returns, what he's done when he's been in there at the safety, this guy really has ice water in his veins, right? I mean, he's there at the big house, and he's bringing back punts like he's a – 4-year guy who's been there and done that in front of 110,000 people. And I'm pretty sure Esko, Minnesota doesn't have that. But unbelievable. I just think the world of what that kid did. And I will say one last thing, Dave, that you always hear this from me and you're going to keep hearing it forever. Throw the ball to our tight ends. Get that going earlier in the game. I watched Michigan and their tight end, who's very good. They threw him 4 balls, had 40-some-odd yards. Now, we did throw the ball to our tight end, Kellersep, but it was just one time, and he did great. So a kid out of Wayzata, Minnesota, another Minnesota kid doing great things. So I like it. I helped the quarterback out even more because the quarterback did a great job, as you said, but a lot of that was really in the second half, basically the fourth quarter. So we were getting thumped pretty good, and I think sometimes we just got to make it a more helpful thing for the quarterback. And obviously throwing to Darius Taylor, I think, is one of those ways of doing that, and he did. He got 10 catches yesterday, but make it a little bit easier on the quarterback with the tight end and some of the running backs, and then you can get those big, big ones with the Daniel Jackson and some of those great receivers that we've got.
And for all the for all the guff we've given PJ Flex second half over the years, too, the run was not working well. It just wasn't yesterday, And so what did they do? Brosmer sat in the pocket. He's finding it seemed like almost every other throw that he made was a seam. Clearly, Michigan was not doing the best job, I didn't think, of covering the middle, and certainly not Elijah Spencer, who was going over the middle. And again, just great throws in tight windows. I cannot underscore this enough for Gopher fans that are like, oh, here we go again. No, this is... I don't like moral victories, but this is as close as you're going to get to Michigan's what? Ranked 12th in the country. They're not, they are not the Michigan of old, but they're also not garbage either. And they lost by 3 points thanks to a great second half where your quarterback stood in the pocket, did not get happy feet, made really gutsy throws, Pete. I mean, sometimes in a tight window. This is a positive step forward, even if it's a loss, which it is.
Right.
But it's still a good step. And I walked away going, you know, you're encouraged by this and you're bummed because with the momentum that was going on, I really felt like, you know, was it going to come down to Kesich again? Mm-hmm. Who knows? And who knows if he makes that? By the way, I hated the idea of trying to put him out there for that 55-yard field goal yesterday. I did not understand that. And please, you're a greater football mind than I am. Maybe talk me down. But if a guy's struggling, and if he doesn't make it, they're going to get the ball back anyway. It was what, four? I think it was 4th and 11. So if you don't want to go for it, that's fine. But why? Why go for a 55-yard field goal with a guy who's had trouble, who's missed chip shots this year?
Yeah, his confidence is definitely not there. With the 55-yarder, it makes that even
more
clear.
You're not going to get that. Right. What's the point of even trying? You know, I mean, I would rather at that point in the game just chuck it down, see if you can find something. I don't know. Maybe that's just my, you know, video game plays. We're always trying to go for it, never punt, so on and so forth. So,
hey, Dave, the other thing is it's not going to get any easier. We got Miller Moss coming to town with USC this coming week. That's going to be a tough one, too, because, you know, Wisconsin held in there really well early on, and then it finally started to just get overwhelmed with, I think, some of the passing and how well USC really is playing right now. And they're ranked number 13 right behind Michigan. So we've got our work cut out for us for sure.
All right, so the StylesFinancial.com talk and text line is lighting up with what happened yesterday. So, Dave, did both referees throw the flag because there were only two referees looking for the offsides? If there was only one flag, why didn't the other ref rule the other? Big Ten did not – okay, so we have conspiracy theories here. The Big Ten did not want the Gophers to win that game. I hate to blame the refs. I was weighted in their favor. Listen, I don't like conspiracy theories. I don't. But it is difficult – to watch that and see the way it goes and have them go through everything with the replay and not wonder why.
Right.
Why? You know, why did it go this way? So is it bias? I don't know. Is it the thought that the refs in the back of their head maybe knew that Michigan was going to win this game? I'm not going to get into the conspiracy theories. I guess I just did. but – you know, they are abound, and we can talk about those as well. We will take your calls and texts on the StylesFinancial.com talk and text line today, 651-461-9226. We have so much to get to. We're going to talk Twins at the bottom of the hour. Carl Anthony Towns was traded the other day. Holy cow. And the Minnesota Lynx are in the semifinals of the WNBA playoffs. We're going to talk about that with play-by-play voice Sloan Martin. That is coming up next. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO. The StylesFinancial.com talk and text line is hot right now, Pete. Talking about the Gophers yesterday and mainly that last play. Someone texting in here, this is Saul and Blaine. If the roles were reversed and it was Michigan trying to recover the kick, it would have been reviewed. Hate to blame the refs, but it was weighted in favor of Michigan. And the whistle should have been blown on the Jackson fumble as well. He was stood up, Saul and Blaine. Okay, well, I'm not with you on the Jackson fumble. He was trying to get extra yardage, right? I mean, it got popped out. You good with that, Pete? Are you in agreement?
No, I'm totally in agreement with you. Yeah. But like we were just talking about in between on the commercial, you don't make that call if it's that close, and it truly was that close. I don't think you even need to make that call. So there is some little fishiness. It didn't feel right, something about that whole thing. And I know we got a lot of texters coming in, and I think most of them are going to probably be on the side that we are, not just because we're Gopher fans. It's just if the call is that close, you don't make the call. I mean, I think that's simple.
You don't because you don't let a call like that change a game.
Right.
So we'll get back to that in a little bit. But tonight, your Minnesota Lynx begin the semifinals of the WNBA playoffs against the Connecticut Sun. Sloan Martin joins us now. Not only is she the play-by-play voice, I had no idea, Sloan, that you were a college basketball player at St. John's Fisher out in New York. I just learned this.
Oh, boy. You're really uncovering it. All the former D3 ballers out there, contact me because we got a lot in common. And be proud, okay? Because you never know when it'll be brought up on the radio.
Well, now, so I knew St. John's Fisher because I went to Hobart College, Hobart and William Smith, which I would imagine.
Oh my gosh!
You played against William Smith, yeah?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah, right up there, and also the home of Bill's Training Camp, one of the few places where they're still moving in their TVs and video game systems, and brings that goodness out.
We do our research on this show. Whatever, regardless of what Matt tells you, we usually do our research. as we look ahead to this series tonight, It's Connecticut. We know what the Lynx have, but I was kind of looking over this, and Dawana Bonner, I had to look up her age because I'm like, how is she still in the league? She's 37 years old.
Wow.
She's still been great in the playoffs. How much does she still have in the tank, and how much do the Lynx and will the Lynx kind of worry about her in this series?
Yeah, I'm at the point in life where I just root for everybody born in the 80s because the numbers are dwindling, and she is certainly one of them. I mean, she is a top five scorer all time in WNBA history, and if you haven't seen her before, you know, she has not only a unique kind of body type and frame, she's 6'4" and about 140 pounds, so very long, lanky, spindly, great defender, can move very quickly at a great height, but also is such a versatile player as well. She is someone who I mentioned who could move quickly, knock down deep threes. Her range does go out quite a bit, but can also make that impact with her versatility as well. And you would certainly not know, not that there's anything wrong with 37, but you would not know that that was her age when you see her on the court. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, it doesn't get talked about, but it's kind of an interesting dynamic that she is actually in a relationship with one of her players, Alyssa Thomas, who was finished second in MVP last year. So you really see that connection too on the court as well that has made this team just so cohesive. This is a team that is used to going deep into the playoffs. They have not gotten over that hump of winning a championship, but it is something that this is the point in the playoffs, guys, and that's why I'm glad, you know, we're talking about this. These are the four teams. These are the teams we have wanted to see go against each other all season long. These are the top four seeds. They have been the entire season, and now it feels like it really is where things begin.
And Sloan, it seems like when I look at the Lynx and I look at Connecticut, they are very much similar in a lot of different ways. The blueprint is there as far as the abilities and where their structure really is strong. I don't even see a whole lot of weakness anywhere, hardly. But being the financial guy, I have to ask you this. The tickets. I took a look to see if tickets are available at all, and I didn't actually get any concrete answers to that, but I saw that some of the numbers that I was seeing for some of the high-end ticket prices are pretty extreme. Have you had a chance to look at that at all?
You know, I haven't, and just a quick aside note. So Matt is actually a season ticket holder with the Lynx. He bought them for me as a birthday present in 2018, and then I was probably hired, and I have been working every single Lynx season since. So we have not been able to share them very much, but he'll bring his pals, and he's you know, big into the WNBA and women's basketball. So they get used, and he enjoys them. But he, because he's in Green Bay, he sold them, and they were snapped up quickly. Like, wow. Next time he picks up his phone, they were already sold. So I don't know about the ticket prices specifically, but it is something that I know WNBA fans are talking about quite a bit. I see chatter amongst other season ticket holders of other teams seeing those prices go up and feeling like, hey, I've been supporting this franchise, you know, for 10 plus or even longer years, and feeling like you're, you know, The dynamics, the financials are certainly different. We want to see this growth, but you certainly don't want those longtime fans to feel squeezed either. But having this be a hot ticket, I feel like that is something that, you know, you want to be very excited about, that people want to be there, experience that excitement, see that win, and, you know, carry this team on throughout the playoffs.
Sloan Martin joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, a play-by-play voice for the Minnesota Lynx. By the way, do we get to hear you tonight, or is this a... I know it's on ESPN. Is that you, or do we have someone else coming in?
No. This is all ESPN. They take over all
boom.
The national duties.
Know,
we don't know what the future. Oh, thank you. We don't know what the future might be. Like, for example, NBC is getting in on, you know, WNBA rights. So it's an exciting time on the TV side to see what's going to happen.
All right, I'll watch it, but I'm going to keep the sound down just in boycott. Okay, just to be fair.
That's a good way.
It's been a couple of years, I think, since the Lynx have really been as dominant as they are this year. A lot of that, obviously, Nifty Chicalier has been incredible. I always turn back to Cheryl Reeve because when you think of coaches, when I think of great coaches in their sport, men's or women's, I don't know if I've seen another basketball coach in recent memory. Obviously, Gino Auriemma, Pat Summitt are always going to come to mind. But in recent memories, in the last, let's say, 5 to 7 years, 5 to 10 years, how does Cheryl Reeve keep doing this? How does she take these rosters that are either loaded with talent and probably egos and maybe not so loaded with talent, but just get the kind of fringe players to buy in. How does she do this year after year and become as successful as these teams have become?
I mean, it is inarguable that she is one of the greatest coaches of all time,
yeah.
Period. End of sentence. No other qualifiers needed for that. And it has also been a transformation process for her, too. I mean, we can all say that the last couple of years, this is the best Lynx team since 2017. That was the final year, officially, of that kind of dynasty era, that yeah. final championship with that group of five, and how special that group was, one of the best dynasties we've seen in basketball of all time. And this is the best chance that they have for a championship. And people may have not realized that coming into this season. You look at off-season pickups like Courtney Williams, like Alanna Smith. Alanna Smith just today named a second team all defense in the WNBA, who was 2 years ago cut from one of the worst franchises in the entire league in the Indiana Fever. Now one of the best players or best role players on this starting five and around the W. It's been a transformation for Cheryl, too. She's had to change how I think she coaches, about what that is like on a day-to-day basis. Her style of play, too. This season, we saw them go five out, everyone shooting threes. It was a completely different style. So I think her ability to adapt, to look at the data, to... And you're right, today, or I should say this year's team, really illustrated a lot about someone who was able to get the most out of the personnel that they have, not forcing them to fit a system, but instead saying, who do we have here? What are their skill sets, and how is it going to help us win? This is really a transformational year, and I think something that, you know, could end up, I had a postseason ballot for, you know, WNBA awards voters, and Cheryl Reeve was my coach of the year, too, and it's not because they massively exceeded expectations. I think if you have a team that has Nafisa Collier on it, who finished second in MVP voting, has gotten better and better every single season, you're not expecting them to miss the playoffs, despite what some national writers may have thought, which certainly they like to point out. They kept that chip on their shoulder. But you can see them being a top four team for sure. So they have come in as a quality team, but I think to reach this point, to be so close to a championship, has been really remarkable to see that kind of progress.
Sloan, I know we have very little time, if any time left, but real quick, if it's not Nafisa Collier that we're looking at to bring the victory home for the Lynx, who would it be?
Kayla McBride, one of the best shooters in the entire WNBA, finding her opportunities, knocking down shots early, and making them guard her outside 3-point line.
Sloan Martin, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And just always know that you're our favorite in that household. Okay, just always remember that. Always.
Good to have that on record. Good.
Yep. You let them know it.
Thanks very much.
Let them know it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Bye-bye.
Sloan Martin there. By the way, she was also, we didn't get a chance to talk about, she also did some broadcasting for the Olympics this year as well.
Yeah.
So she's really great. Great on television and great knowledge as well. So we'll step aside, take a quick break, come back. We'll do the fast break. You're listening to The Huddle on E3O WCCO. That's where you go, Josh.
Fast breaks, yes. Hey, we're firing on all cylinders today.
We got it, baby.
Yes. Yes. I don't know if you guys have heard this, but the Minnesota Twins, they have officially been eliminated from postseason contention.
What?
Yes, breaking news into CCO. Dave Schwartz, Pete Najarian, if you are the person in charge heading into this offseason, what is your first top-of-the-list order of business? Dave, we'll start with you.
Oh, brother. Well, I mean, I don't even know. The first order of business is probably to get out of town for about a month and let things blow over. Honestly, like if I'm the Poleheads, I'm leaving town for like a month. This is, and we'll talk about this later, but there's so many systemic issues with this team, from how much spending they didn't do and openly said they weren't going to do, to what they did at the deadline, to what Rocco did in the last month of the season, which we'll talk about because I have strong feelings about that. There's a lot of issues here. It all stems from, I think, once again, a lack of pitching depth. They had one solid starter once you're injured, and they didn't bring anybody in. And the one guy that they did, the DeScalfini kid, never even played. How do you not do your due diligence on that? So there's a lot here, but honestly, like, if I'm the Poleheads, I really don't think I'm coming back to Minnesota for about a month and a half. That's just me.
And I blame the Poleheads on this one. Yeah, and, you know, it is what it is. But to your point, Dave, I mean, you're not spending the money. You didn't do anything really that we were all looking for during the trade deadline. Pitching depth has been an issue for the entire year, and we just didn't address it. And so you kind of put, you know, Rocco in a very difficult spot. And then did he actually fumble it a little bit as well? Probably. So I think that you could point the finger at quite a few different parts of the organization right now to say, hey, this needs to get done, this needs to get done, this needs to get done, and then point at yourselves if you're the owners and say, we've got to figure out how much money we're willing to invest.
And, I mean, he was on Joe Paulette was on Jason DeRush's show and said, laid it out that they weren't going to spend money this year because Tampa, you know, Tampa didn't need to spend money to win, and said, like, the money's down. That's either going to go really well for you or completely backfire, and it completely backfired.
I believe I was in studio for that. That was quite fun.
And how long did it take you to pick your jaw up off the floor?
Well, luckily nobody else was here because it was obviously down at spring training in Fort Myers when we talked about it. But, yeah, it was. I'll never forget it. We are on the heels of another weekend, another crazy weekend in college football. A few upsets on the scoreboard in yesterday's college football setting, whether it's Alabama in the crazy fashion, holding on as the four seed takes down number two Georgia. We also saw Kentucky upset number six Ole Miss in what was Lane Kiffin's 100th game as a head coach. Arizona taking That's down amazing. Number 10 Utah. And then if we want to throw this in there as well, 23 Kansas State taking down 20 Oklahoma State. Pete, we'll start with you. Which upset to you sticks out the most from yesterday's college football action?
There's so many, as you just went through. I mean, it's incredible. I would say this. I don't know whether it was an upset or not, but there's a team that you didn't mention, so I'm going to throw out this name. Have you guys followed at all that BYU is 5-0? It's incredible to me to see their part of the Big 12. They are not stumbling at all. Their offense is great. They've got a quarterback who runs and throws the ball incredibly well. And nobody's talking about BYU. They talk a little bit about Kansas State, LSU, Notre Dame, some of these schools that have dropped a game here or there. Been some really fun games to watch. That Miami game was unbelievable. But BYU is, that's just one of those teams that I think everybody looks past them. And the next thing you know, they've won another game.
Yeah, BYU 22nd ranked, beat Baylor 34-28. But yeah, undefeated, and they beat a 2-3 team. So there you have it.
I'm going to turn it to Pete because he brought this up before. Indiana's 5-0. Like, how the heck did that happen? When you said that, Pete, when's the last time Indiana was 5-0?
It's probably got to be at least 50, 60 years. Not basketball, but football. Yeah. But they've got a quarterback. They got a new coach. They're rolling along. They're 2-0 in the Big Ten. They beat UCLA and Maryland. Not exactly the murderer's row, but still, they've got a quarterback with 11 touchdowns and two interceptions that is really special, and other players as well. So this is not a surprise necessarily. Indiana is for real, I think, this year in the Big Ten.
We'll do another quick one here. Just a general question, if you will, because the last week, I don't know if you guys talked about it much on the huddle with Charlie, but Oakland, no longer home to a professional baseball, football, or even a basketball team. Dave, we'll start with you. I don't know if either of you guys have actually been out to the stadium itself, but what is your fondest memory of the Oakland Coliseum?
I tried to go. So we were in California. My wife had a conference out there. This is probably 7 or 8 years ago, I think. I tried to go. We were in San Francisco, and I was going to get tickets to go over, and the guy at the hotel said, you don't want to do that. You don't want to have to leave that place by yourself after, like, 10 o'clock. It's not a good thing. I'm like, oh, okay. So I didn't go. You know what I remember about Oakland? To me, the A's, it was always Ricky Henderson. And remember Ricky Henderson? And he could steal bases better than anybody. Yeah. Nobody steals bases like that anymore. I mean, that guy collected them like they were trading cards. He would always try to get a couple a game. When I think of Oakland, I think of Ricky Henderson stealing bases, always.
I think of the Raiders. I'll tell you what, and the one thing that people always looked past, and this is why it wasn't such a great stadium, because they shared it, baseball and football, which made it a little bit more complicated, plus the rising of the water in the bay and all the rest of it, and how that affected the field. and when there was still baseball going, when football there, that made for a very complicated, you had, you know, all the different aspects of the baseball field were still there for the most part. So it was always a bit of a dump, but that's what the Raiders were about. And that's what made them so great and so fun, was that was Raiders football. So I actually look back fondly about that. And yeah, was it the greatest neighborhood in the world? No, but I grew up out there. I was never afraid.
Well, you're 6'6", 280 pounds. Who's going to mess with you?
I think the best the Coliseum ever looked is when Hollywood put it in one of their movies in Moneyball. I think that's the best and the only time that they painted that stadium up to look as shiny and brand new and as great as it did is when Brad Pitt in Moneyball had that stadium featured. Real quick, we'll do a rapid fire one. You guys can pick which one of you wants to go first. Whether it is Sam Darnold, Andy Dalton, Justin Fields, maybe even throw in Anthony Richardson. Has there been a QB through the first few weeks of the NFL that has popped out to you, good or bad? You can go either way with this one when it comes to quarterbacks.
Dave?
I'm going to say Sam Darnold. How can you not?
Yeah.
The guy's been incredible. Isn't he leading the league in touchdown throws right now? Or at least he's up there. I mean, I don't think – and obviously we knew that he was probably going to start the first few weeks, but I don't think anybody thought – that Sam Darnold was going to be this Sam Darnold. He might be playing the best football of his career right now.
I think you're exactly right, Dave. And when you say that, I think it also doesn't hurt the fact that you've got the great receivers that we've got with the Minnesota Vikings. And we pointed that out, that was at least something that I think really stood out for me as far as what Sam could do with that. I'm still shocked at what he's doing right now, but the Red Rifle, too, down in Carolina, he's really actually playing probably the best NFL football that he's played since he's been around. And he's been around a long time. So I'll go with both of those.
Well, and I've heard that argument, right? Like he hasn't had, Justin Jefferson and all these guys, but he still doesn't have a tight end who has, you know, he's got some, but he still doesn't have his best tight end. And when he was in San Francisco, correct me if I'm wrong, but he had Christian McCaffrey, he had Deebo Samuel, right? Was Ayuk there yet? He was there, right?
So I mean, he might have been.
I think he had some talent around him. Mm-hmm. It's just different this year.
Yep. The quarterback whisperer stepping in.
KOC, baby. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We're getting a lot of texts here. We're going to talk Twins. Is this the worst meltdown in Twins history? We'll talk about that coming up next.
Hey, we're not the Sox. We're not the White Sox.
I know. They lost 100. The other day, they passed 121 losses.
It's a new record.
The most ever. Hey, listen, this was Bally Sports North tweeted this last night, and I saved it. At the high water mark of the season on August 17, the Twins were 70-53 and had a 5-game cushion in the wild card race. Since then, since August 17th to now, they won 12. They went 12-25. 12 games is what they won. Is this the worst Minnesota sports meltdown that I've only been here since 2007. So I was trying to think about this. I don't know if I remember a time. I'm sure there were some wild seasons. I think there were a couple where there was one or two, and it might have been the last year of Mike Yeo where they were in it, and then by the end of the season they had fallen out. But I mean, to have a 5-game cushion in the wild card race with a little over a month to go and to lose it in the way they did, has there ever been something like this, guys? I don't know.
It's awful. It's been an unbelievable September, right? I mean, you used the word earlier. I think you said it was embarrassing. It is embarrassing. It's an embarrassing collapse. They, you know, even in the last 10, but we said this all year, Dave, that they were beating the teams that were subpar and yeah. They could not beat a team basically with a winning record, or at least, you know, sweep a series or something like that. And it's just been that consistent. And I think this is almost going on the second year of the consistency of that. Now, last year we didn't collapse in September, but this year, this is about as bad as it could get. And I know we got hit with injuries because the bats were the one thing that was standing up for us. But unfortunately, the pitching was getting worse and worse. And then suddenly the bats went a little sour. Well, So that it all just contributed into what was an unbelievable spin. And this is it's the worst I can remember. I don't know, unless Josh, you got something.
So this is, we've had late season just drops before. I think the sole reason that this is such a bad meltdown is strictly the expectation coming out of the playoffs last year was, hey, we're going to be back and stronger and better than ever. Obviously, you know, 2 weeks later, they announced the payroll was going to be cut and et cetera. And I feel like handcuffing payroll for Rocco wasn't really fair to him. And that's why I feel like he'll for sure he'll see this last year of his deal out. I don't think they're going to get rid of him here in the next week or two, because I just don't think it's fair to cut to get rid of a manager when you were handcuffed like that a year ago.
It had cost him too much money to do it.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, but if you're the poll ads, if it's not Rocco, are you looking at Falvey and Levine?
It's tough, because that's a leadership duo that's been around here for a while. I feel like it's not DEFCON 5 where you need to cut those guys yet, but it's definitely a, how can we, and I don't want to hear about prospects. I'm tired of hearing about Twins have prospects in the minors, blah, blah, blah. But it's going to be interesting to see whether it's the office or the team who gets cut here in the next handful of months.
I'm not a proponent of, you know, telling people that they should be fired and lose their jobs, but we're getting it. Well, let's go ahead. We got the texters will do it for us. The stylesfinancial.com talking text line. Someone texts in, get rid of Falvey, Levine, and Rocco. Start over with old school baseball minds. I vote for a Molitor return. Oh. He made it to the playoffs even though the Twins traded away his players at the deadline. He actually understands the game. It's hard. But I do think that somewhere in there's blame to be passed around. Let's put it that way. I do have two really big reasons why I think this kind of went sour at the end, and we'll talk about that next hour. We'll step aside now. Hour number two of the Huddle coming back. You're listening to the Huddle on 830 WCCO.